one session. May all who come here be heard. May truth and justice be served by what we do here. Good afternoon. Welcome to our WebEx version of our September Court of Appeals. I am Francie Reedman. I am pleased to be joined on my right by Judge Mike Hurdle of Omaha and on my left by Judge Dave Arterburn of Napoleon. We have one case that is scheduled for WebEx. We have one case that is live. I believe we have checked mics. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And can counsel both hear us?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So we will go ahead and we will proceed with our first case of the day, which is Gondora Moore versus Moore. Gondora Moore versus Moore. Appellant, whenever you are ready, you may begin.
Your Honor, is that Steve Stroop before the appellant? May I please the court? This is an appeal from the Lancaster County District Court, a divorce case. The parties were married in 2012. They had two children. Their ages right now, respectively, are 8 and 6. The court heard the case in 2019, entered a final decree in October of 2019. With respect to our assignments of error, I'd like to start with the division of marital assets first. Within the court's decree, specifically, the court allocates $5,800 to my client, Miss Gondora Moore, to account for. And it indicates that she dissipated those marital funds. It's my client's position that she did not dissipate those marital funds. It should not be included in the statement of assets and debts attached to the actual decree. First of all, in order to have dissipation, you have to show the court that there's been some marital discord or that the parties are experiencing an irretrievable breakdown of their marriage. When those funds were transferred from Mr. Moore's account to my client's account, an amount of $5,800, that was in February of 2017. There's no evidence on the record that the parties were undergoing marital discord at that point in time. In fact, they didn't physically separate until July of 2017. So I think one of the most powerful elements, obviously, of dissipation is lacking based on the record. Additionally, if you look at the transcript, specifically Exhibit 17, and look at the expenditures outlined for the $5,800, it doesn't appear at all that the funds are being dissipated. My client's using the funds to purchase things for the family, for the marriage, and for the household. Sums went to Progressive Insurance. A couple other large sums went to a Capital One credit card.
Counsel, I understand there was there's conflict in the record as to the purpose of those funds that were transferred. There's some evidence in the record that they were transferred for purposes of payment of medical bills. If that were the case, how does that affect the argument on dissipation?
If I understand your question right, if the funds were transferred for medical bills
and not used for that purpose, what effect does that have?
I guess there'd have to be an agreement between the parties. That would have to be on the record and be straightforward and clear cut. And that's not the case on the record at all.
But didn't the judge find that the purpose was for medical bills?
I don't believe she did. No. She doesn't indicate that what it's for, and she doesn't flat out indicate in the decree under the marital estate division that was dissipated. However, it's indicated in Appendix C, which is attached to the decree. Mr. Moore seems to testify to at one point in time, he thought that money was used for medical bills because he was surprised at all the medical bills that accumulated after the parties separated or shortly around the parties separated. So, and then He goes on further in his testimony, indicates that all the expenditures that Mrs. Gandara made were not legitimate or not wasteful, not selfish expenditures. So, but I think the more key element we have to look at, whether it's an agreement or not, is whether or not there was a breakdown of the marriage, whether there's marital discord. I think that's the first element you look at when you look at dissipation. There's also an argument too as to whether these funds really become marital funds. Of course, he inherited the money first, but I think when you talk about dissipation, it has to be marital money. I don't think it can dissipate separate non-marital funds, but it's our position that the inherited funds do become marital at some point in time, because he first transfers the money to a joint account, then he transfers the $5,800 to my client's individual account for bills. So that's our position on the division of the marital estate. We think that $5,800 should be taken off the spreadsheet, and then the amounts recalculated, which would obviously give my client a more significant property equalization payment. Our second assignment of error I'd like to touch on, given the time I have, would be the child support calculation. I guess, first of all, the health insurance deduction and credit for Mr. Moore doesn't seem to be fair and accurate based on the evidence. Mr. Moore testified on the record that health insurance for him and the two children is $160 twice per month. That by itself is roughly $320 per month. His pay stubs, part of the transcript, even look like it's less than that. But there's no real clear testimony as to how much the medical insurance is for him and the kids, other than his testimony, which is $160 twice per month for him and the children, which should be significantly less than the actual credit and deduction that was on the child support calculation the judge used, and it's attached to the actual decree.
Was there any evidence of how that was divided? How much of it was for the child's health insurance and how much was for the parents?
No, Your Honor, not on the record.
So what are you asking for as to that? Is there zero on both of those lines?
No, I don't think that would be fair, because he is paying health insurance. I think if my default always is, if you can't find out exactly how much it is between the parent and the children, is do a 1/3, 2/3 split or a 50-50 split of the total amount. So in this case, it'd be roughly $320. Either we give the parent $160 and then the children $160, or you could do, like I said, the 1/3, 2/3 split. But either way, you're looking at a significant difference in the total amount, which is going to make a difference on the child support amount. Additionally, on that calculation, we're looking at the issue of earning capacity, which is a tough one. My client had a job from 2016 until 2018 where she was making $58,000 per year. She indicated that she had to voluntarily quit that job because of her care for the children after Mr. Moore left the state. She couldn't continue with the stress, couldn't continue working that many hours per day and be a single parent at home and be there for her daughters. She indicated several times that job was a 10 to 12 to 14 hour a day job at United Healthcare. And when you look at that, sure, she's making $58,000 a year, but it appears from me and from the pay stubs that it's a salary job. It's not an hourly pay job. So if you were to calculate that out to 40 hours a week, under that amount she's being paid, she'd be making $10,000 less per year than the $58,000. So more like, say, $45,000 or $47,000 per year. So she's clearly working overtime and not getting paid for it because it's a salary job. And the reason I think that's significant is because when the courts look at earning capacity, I think they look at what a party is making at a rate of 40 hours per week. I've never seen a situation where a court looks at earning capacity of somebody and looks at all the overtime they got when they're at a particular job. They look at what their base rate of pay was at 40 hours per week. And I think to assign $58,000 to her per year when she was more or less forced to quit a job based on the circumstances, and then is receiving unemployment at $400 per week and trying to find another job is just an abuse of discretion.
Do you have any case law that would support when a parent goes from having two parents in the household to one in the household, that being a basis for being able to diminish your income for purposes of child support?
Your Honor, no, I do not have any. To answer your question, I do not have any case law on that. But to me, it seems reasonable and fair. It's almost along the lines of her having to quit involuntarily because she was put in that position. I can only imagine being the parent of a single parent of two kids that at the time of everything going on in 2017, being five and three the children and having to juggle all that and still work 10, 12, 14 hours a day. It's just not feasible. So she was put in that situation by what went on, by virtue of what Mr. Moore did and by the fact that he took off and left out of state.
Thank you, counsel. Whenever you're ready.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Alex Lears and I'm here on behalf of Mr. Moore, the appellant. I would like to address the appellant's arguments briefly. First, with regard to the money that was deposited, that $5,800, I would like to clarify that the district court did find and agreed with my client that my client's testimony that the $5,800 was placed into that account with the understanding it was going to be put towards medical bills. And that's in the record. It's on page 8 of the decree where the court specifically finds that Mr. Moore's inheritance, part of that was meant to be applied to medical bills.
Does that matter? I mean, if you look at the definition of dissipation, it has to be for a selfish purpose.
Yes, Your Honor, I agree. I do believe it does matter. The parties had an agreement as to what the money was going to go towards marital expenses, towards medical bills. And that's the only reason that my client said he was putting money into the joint account where Ms. Gandara and Mr. Moore paid their marital expenses from. That's the only reason he was going to put that money in there. It does come into an account of what was the money actually spent on. And Ms. Gandara could not explain at trial what the money was spent on.
We have our bank records that show that they were spent on like cell phone, food, clothing, stores, things like that, that seem to be marital purposes.
And Your Honor, yes, the bank records are in place. If it was just grocery expenses and just gas, typical marital expenses, that's one thing. There was also in those bank records showing money going towards debts that my client was not aware of at any point. This net credit debt that we learned of at trial was one of the expenses that we saw on that bank statement being paid for with disinherited sums. So with that, that the court was within the scope of discretion to find that my client's testimony was more credible along those lines too. I mentioned that net credit loan. That was something that, again, we found out at trial. Between day one of trial and day three, there was more discovery that had to be completed for this. Testimony was presented to that being newly discovered after day one of trial. And yet Mr. Moore still agreed to Rory Madden with the with his expenses proposed a new division of the marital assets and debts to try and remedy that and to be more fair in how he was calculating the division of the marital assets and debts. In light of that, I believe, and that's why I read the decree when the court was reviewing, you know, the medical expense, medical bills not being paid, and then we're throwing in a new previously undisclosed debt into the mix. She was within her discretion to adopt the overall division of assets and debts that was she found to be the more credible of the two proposed spreadsheets.
Counsel, can you address the appellant's argument regarding the timing, that there's no evidence in the record that in February of 2017, there's any evidence that this was going through an irretrievable breakdown?
Your Honor, as to timing, I believe both of the parties testified to the it being a rocky relationship from the start, whether it was a complete breakdown or not, something that was going to be filed in district court for a dissolution. That was, I don't think that burden was met as to clearly what the timing was when the marital discord was happening. It was at best unclear, but there was testimony from both parties that it had been going on for long before the separation occurred.
Whose burden is it to prove? Isn't it the party who's trying to claim dissipation?
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
Would that be your client then?
It would be my client. So if the burden was not met, then it is, it would be my client's burden.
Can we talk just a little bit on the health insurance issue? Would you agree there's no evidence in the record as to how the health insurance was allocated, which went to the parent, which went to the child?
Your Honor, yes and no. There's no documentation. We didn't get anything from a human resources representative showing the breakdown in the premiums. That would be the best evidence to put forth. What we did have was my client's prior pay stubs, which were at the time of trial over a year old. So he testified there had been premium increases. We offered Exhibit 14, which was a child support calculation based off of figures that had been given to us, but we did not have the a document exhibit that would have been admissible at court. Instead, we had my client's testimony after reviewing Exhibit 14 and that child support calculation that, yes, that was the correct calculation for his monthly income, or as close to a correct one, without having seen his most recent pay stub, and that was what he believed he presented, and that was correct for the health insurance premiums as well. I don't believe that documentation is necessary. Evidence absolutely is necessary, but my client's testimony should be sufficient to meet that evidentiary burden.
So does Exhibit 14, does that match up with the pay stubs?
The pay stubs were over a year old. They do not match up. My client had to testify to the increase in both his salary and in the premiums. Okay. So the even his monthly income doesn't match up to the pay stubs that were offered.
Okay. So other than Exhibit 14, is there anything that indicates how much of that premium went for his insurance and how much went for the child's?
Nothing apart from my client's testimony.
Did he testify specifically as to that?
He testified to the accuracy of the amounts in Exhibit 14.
Can we talk just a little bit about the failure of the court to include a safety plan for the children once it determined that there had been domestic violence?
Yes, Your Honor. The court did determine that there was an incident, that Mr. Moore assaulted Ms. Gondara Moore, and noted that there was conflicting testimony as to how often that occurred, but at least it occurred on one date that the parties agreed. Court did not determine that there was physical violence, but she did, the district court did determine that the children were not at risk and that there was no danger for them to have for Mr. Moore to have parenting time with the children. As for a failure on there being protections, there was a protection order that was being heard at the same time. An ex parte domestic abuse protection order was taken up at the same time as trial on the dissolution. And that was affirmed, sustained for another year. And there's also evidence of a no contact order and no contact provisions within a probation order. There was sufficient safety provisions for Ms. Gondara in other court orders, in addition to the protection order that the district court affirmed within the decree of dissolution. So I don't see it as a failure on the district court's part at all, that there's adequate protection in several different court orders.
Well, didn't the parenting plan allow pickup of the children at the home?
Your Honor, it did not specify a place, but I see I'm about out of time. May I finish my answer?
Yes.
The order did not provide a specific time or a specific place for where these transitions were to occur. And it's reasonable for the court to do so just with the nature of traveling across the states. There's not going to be a set time or even a set place. It could be Omaha or Lincoln. But there's nothing allowing Mr. Moore to go to Ms. Gondara's residence. There's still that protection order in place precluding him from going to her home or daycare or school. It was modified, but Ms. Gondara would have to name the place and share where the children are going to be for Mr. Moore to pick them up. That's something they'll have to work out together.
Okay, thank you. I believe the appellant is out of time.
Correct.
Okay, the case is submitted. Thank you. Thanks for your willingness to appear via WebEx.
Thank you.
Thank you.